Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Ask Katie Anything. I'm your host, licensed marriage and family therapist, Katie Morton. I'm so glad that you're here. In today's episode, I'm going to explain why a therapist won't just tell you what you want to hear and how to get over the feeling that they're only being kind because you're paying them. Then I'm also going to talk about inner child work and why it can be so difficult for us to do. Also, what to do if therapy isn't helping us and we're actually finding ourselves feeling worse, and some tips for emotion regulation. Finally, I'm going to talk about what to do if we've been assaulted by our therapist and whether or not we play a role in our own suffering. Without further ado, let's get into question number one.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
His first question says, Katie, how do I believe the things my therapist says and not just think she's saying them because I am paying her? I've been in therapy for over 2 years, and I'm just now discussing childhood sexual abuse with her. I find myself doubting everything she says when she gives me validation, like she's just saying what I want to hear and not really being honest. I want to receive everything she says. How do I get past this? Thank you for everything. Love your show. I'm so glad. Of course. This is a good question. And I hear things like this a lot. Like the fact that we're paying a therapist would mean that then they're going to do what we want them to do or say what we want them to say, or we can't really trust them, or they're only spending time with us because we're paying them. And there can be a lot of what I would call kind of like complications around the dynamic of a therapeutic relationship. So first of all, I want you all to know that even though it feels like we pay therapists a lot, and if I sound hoarse, it's because South by Southwest is happening and I've been at restaurants and at venues and screaming over things, so I'm sorry. So therapists get into our line of work to help people, period. And what I mean by that is that even though it feels like we pay therapists a lot for their time, we don't actually make that much. And I'm not saying we don't make a living. We make a living, but we don't make like millions of dollars, right? And so we don't get into this line of work for the money. And I don't know why. I just feel like I always have to say that because I even know personally I pay my therapist $150 a week, and that feels like a lot of money because it is. But I also know she doesn't make that much because our schedules are never fully packed. We have a lot of overhead costs. I just know that, right? And so I want you to know that in case that's helpful. But as therapists, it doesn't actually behoove us to tell you what you need to hear, because number one, that is, or not what you need to hear, what you want to hear. Number one, that's not going to build trust. Number two, that's not going to move you towards your goals. And number three, that could mean that you stop seeing us and stop working on yourself because it's not effective. As therapists, we're taught and trained to challenge our patients. Now, we do that softly. Most of us aren't going to just call you out, unless that's the dynamic of the relationship or the type of therapy that you prefer. We're not going to say like, hey, stop doing that. But we might mention like, this seems like a pattern that we've seen before. Is it possible we think that's related to your people-pleasing behavior? Or do we think this is another addictive style of behavior? We might ask these questions to challenge you and to push you. Offering you, you know, support and validation is going to be a piece of our therapeutic work so that you feel like we see you and hear you. And then we're able to even have a relationship at all. It's not about what, we're not telling you what you want to hear. We're offering what you need to feel better. And overall, that's where we're coming from as therapists in this role. But when it comes to your work on this and like the real question, like, how do I get past this? I keep thinking that my therapist is just saying these things because I'm paying her. Tell your therapist about this. Now, I know you might be like, Katie, that's so uncomfortable. I want to jump like out of my skin. Ugh. The reason I say this is because it doesn't have anything to do with your therapist. It has everything to do with your dynamics in life. This probably affects other relationships where you think, oh, they're only saying that to be nice. oh, if someone gives you a compliment, you're like, oh, they don't really know me, or oh, they're just saying that because they want something from me, right? We probably struggle to take any compliment, to take any validation or support seriously, possibly because we were emotionally neglected as a child and we never received any of that. You said there's childhood sexual abuse in your past, so that's probably playing a role. Attachment might be an issue. We might think that everybody's trying to manipulate us because that's how someone, you know, harmed us in the past. There could be a lot to this. And so to assume that it's just because of a therapist and it's just because you're paying them really is only like the smallest piece of the puzzle. It's like this iceberg that we see just over the water a little bit, but underground, it's huge. I think there's a lot more to this. And so let your therapist know, hey, I have a tough time accepting your validation, accepting any of your support, because I feel like it's only because I'm paying you, or you're just not being honest. You're just saying what you think I want to hear. You know, let them know this. And you can even say like, hey, I talked to this weird therapist on the internet, and she said that it could have something to do with my past and the way I was raised, or some other traumas, or things like that. Because it's in that self-exploration, in that curious about where this is coming from, that you will truly figure out what's happening, and also probably see all the ways this affects your life. And so I think that's going to be a big piece of your therapeutic work. And yes, I know that answer kind of sucks, but it's the truth. It's not as simple as like, oh, do this and you'll get past it, because I don't think it actually has anything to do with your therapist or your relationship. That's only one part of it. Okay. Okay. Moving on to
your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Question number two, it says, hey, Katie, I love your channel and both of your books. Yay, wonderful. It says, I'm wondering why I'm having such a hard time connecting to my inner child. I have some childhood trauma that I'm working on in therapy, but I can't seem to do the inner child work. I don't really like my inner child. She's vulnerable. Do you have any tips to help overcome this hurdle? Thank you for all that you do. Now, there is an add-on. Yeah, just one add-on to this, but let's get into this first. And because there's already information in here that's helpful. The information that says, I don't really like my inner child. She's vulnerable. I'd be very curious to have you journal, or just even just do like a thought exercise. I know a lot of us don't like to write and don't have time to journal, don't want to make the time to journal. No judgments. It's okay to do a thought exercise where you like ponder about vulnerability and your definition of it and how it feels to be vulnerable. What does it mean to be vulnerable? What do you tell yourself about vulnerability? Are we kind of like, because my hypothesis would be that as an adult, because you don't like your inner child because she's vulnerable, my hypothesis is that as an adult, we've got all the guards up. We're probably what I would call toxically independent, where we do not, will not depend on anybody else to do anything. We do everything ourselves. Can't trust anybody to do what we need to get done. We do it ourselves. And you know, we're super guarded. We don't really let people in. We might be more like avoidant to protect, possibly anxious, but I'd assume more avoidant. And that's, I feel like that's the start of this work. We're going to have to get to know vulnerability a little bit, and you don't have to apply it to yourself yet. Again, what do we think about it? What do we say vulnerability means? If I told you that I was feeling vulnerable, how do you interpret that? Like, let's just dig into it a little bit, because I believe the reason that we don't want to do the inner child work, or we can't seem to do it, we're like, oh, I can't connect, is because of the fact that we don't like to remember what it was like to be vulnerable. We don't like to look back on little us, because it could be a trauma trigger. It could make us feel vulnerable now. It could be just so physically uncomfortable that we kind of like want to rip our skin off. And so Instead of feeling like, oh, we have to jump into our inner child and we have to feel it and we have to get connected, let's instead be curious about this reluctance. Let's consider what are you, I mean, I don't know, you have to let me know. Some of this might be a little bit too much, but you can do it in therapy, is to maybe write a letter to your inner child about how you don't really like them. Write them a letter. Be honest. How does it feel? Are you like, you son of a bitch? Why weren't you tougher? Why'd you keep putting yourself in that position? There's no need for any kind of expectation with this. You can say and do whatever you want. You're talking to yourself and your past self, really. And it's important for you to be honest and open about it as much as you can. Even as much as it makes you angry, want to cry, all of the above. Write a letter to your inner child. And if you can, then allow the inner child, your younger you, give it right back to adult you. Like, how dare you? Don't you know what it was like to be me? Do you remember? Right? Because I think there's a couple of pieces when it comes to inner child work. Number one, it feels really woo-woo. Well, it's hard for us to get into it and to stay into it. We can be like, that feels weird. I don't like it, right? I'm not a hippy-dippy weirdo. I don't know how to do this. It's imaginary work sometimes. So that can be a hurdle. Second hurdle, a lot of us like to like not live in the past, like cut the past off, not go back, forget it ever existed. La, la, la. Repress memories, right? So that's uncomfortable. Third is that we as adults, and this I've talked about this before, but like as an adult, when we look back on a younger version of ourselves, it's hard for us to remember what it was like to be that younger version because we see it through adult eyes. And we're like, why didn't you leave? Why didn't you speak up? Why didn't you say no? Why didn't you? Blah, blah, blah. Because we don't realize the resources that we had as a child were like pretty much zero. And the power that we had was pretty much zero. And not to mention our physical strength was less and we were smaller and we were more vulnerable and we didn't know. Even just the knowledge of the world was lesser. And so I'd encourage you to let your therapist know you're running into this hurdle. Let's dig into the vulnerability and figure out like more about our experiences with it and our judgments of it. And feel free to write a nasty letter to your inner child. And then if you feel able, have them write one back. And then, ta-da, you're already doing inner child work. But I have a feeling that it's a trigger for you. And so there may be some pieces in here, that's why I was like, do it in therapy, where your therapist is gonna have to assist you in calming your nervous system down so we don't get so overwhelmed. Because it's hard work, what you're doing. It's not easy. When I say, oh, we should do inner child work, and I have a whole workshop on it on my website at katiemorton.com if you're interested, if that assists you and your therapist in any way. There's also books I recommend for this at my Amazon shop. Just go to amazon.com/shop/KatieMorton. I have tons of books and items in there that I personally like and use. That could be helpful too. But those are all going to be little steps on the way to overcoming this hurdle. I know that you'll get there, but there's just a lot tied up in it. And so your therapist is going to have to help you calm your nervous system down. We're going to have to keep pushing forward little by little so we don't get too overwhelmed. All the while being honest. Inner child work, and maybe this is probably my fault. It's not like peachy keen roses and puppy dog tails. It's not like a happy thing. Inner child work can mean that we're angry at our inner child. Our inner child also might want to throw a tantrum and be like, why didn't you save me? Like, fuck you. Ah, it might throw fits. That's okay. Life is messy. Shit's complicated. It's painful. And so feel free to throw tantrums, to yell, to get angry. From both sides of the coin, from adult you and inner child you, because that's the real honest conversation that you probably need to have. Okay. Now the add-on here says, my new therapist is also starting to touch on some inner child stuff and they end up deflecting or disengaging. I think it just feels threatening or scary. Is there a way to get past it? I wonder if it's partly because I haven't told her that much about my past trauma. That could definitely be it. It's kind of overwhelming to talk about, I'm sure. I consider transferring my file from my previous therapist who I saw for years and pretty much knew everything, but that feels really vulnerable too. And I'm just not sure if it would actually help. Thank you so much for all of your wonderful work. Of course, we could have our previous therapist transfer files. We definitely could do that. But I feel like the real work in here is actually in the talking about it. And I'm curious, I have a couple of questions. So your old therapist that you saw for years, did they know everything just because of time spent? If the answer is yes, and you're like, yeah, it's because I saw them forever, we're fine. But if you're like, no, there was something about that therapist that I liked better, then if we don't feel that with a new therapist, I encourage you to try to find someone where you do, okay? But as far as like that disengaging and deflecting, the reason you're not able to right now is because of that trauma, because it's too triggering, because you haven't talked about it and you might not be ready. And so I encourage you to find a way to tell your therapist this now. So letting your new therapist know, hey, you know, there's a lot of stuff I haven't been able to talk about yet. And so this inner child stuff is a little overwhelming. Can we go slower? Can we try a different route? Can we work on this other thing first? Like, it's okay to advocate for that and to speak up, because if we're not able to do it and we're like, oh, this feels too threatening, too scary. And so let them know that that's where you're at, because like I've talked about in the past, I think there's a big piece of our therapeutic work, which is in the process of therapy, not in the goals or us figuring out how to get over this hurdle or move through this tough spot. Yes, that's great. And those are those aha moments. But a majority, probably like 85% of our therapy is in that process where you're like, I'd like to talk about this and do this, but it's too threatening, too scary. I shut down. Why am I shutting down? Why does it feel threatening? It's in those answers that we really learn about ourselves, and we end up moving forward more quickly towards those goals and the things like overcoming the hurdle and talking about it. The fact that you have talked about it with a previous therapist is great. And I do encourage you to at least acknowledge that you had before and it went okay. Because sometimes I find that in the trauma story or trauma response, we try to tell ourselves that if we share it with someone, they're going to hate us or they're not going to believe us or whatever. And if we have a previous experience of sharing it and having it be okay, then we can turn to that previous experience and remind ourselves, hey, I told somebody, they weren't embarrassed for me. They didn't cry. They didn't leave me, right? We kind of have all of that like proof already. And so I encourage you to at least recognize that and remind yourself of it as you move forward. Okay. Okay. I hope that helps. Let's move on to question number three. Question number three says, dear Katie, I hope you're doing well. I am. I've been in therapy for almost 2 years now, and I feel like my problems have just been getting worse. No matter what I try to do, my mental health either stays the same or doesn't get any better. I'm having a hard time figuring out if it might just be because I'm scared to get better. I know you might suggest finding another therapist, but the problem is that for some reason, I'm extremely attached to my therapist. I'm not sure if I'd be able to function without her in my life. Interesting. My entire existence relies on her presence at the moment, and I feel like therapy is the only thing that's keeping me going. Remember that. Okay, we'll come back to that. My brain constantly goes back and forth between leaving therapy because I don't think I need it anymore and others have it worse. However, I can't get myself to leave because I'm really scared. Before therapy, I didn't self-harm, but for some reason started doing it after a year of therapy. Remember that too. And I tell myself that that's the only way I deserve to be able to go. If I don't self-harm, then I'm not allowed to go to my appointment since I feel like I'm wasting my therapist's time on something that might not be important. I'm sorry that this is so long, but my question is, how do I know whether or not I should just leave therapy if it's making me worse? And if so, how do I stop being so attached to my therapist? Thank you, Katie. I love this question. It's not something we've talked about before that I remember, at least recently, and it's something that is so incredibly common. And that is, attachment to therapists leads us to feel worse and be worse, okay? What I mean by that, when we feel so attached to our therapist, and like this person said, that I'm not sure if I'd be able to function without her in my life, okay? When we feel that way about our therapist, I wouldn't be able to function. That can cause us to continually make ourselves be like, quote unquote, doing worse in life, so that we can keep them around. Like you even said, I self-injure so that I can show up for my appointment, even though I never used to do that. We've got some like unhealthy attachment stuff going on. I know you know that. I'm not telling you anything new, but I'm just saying that this is really common. I've had patients do both things. I've had patients like get better really quickly. And then when I'm like, I don't know if maybe we should take a break from therapy, then they get worse really fast. And kind of doing this like, trying to keep therapy around, keep me around by behaving in certain ways. Super, super common. And the reason we do it is usually because of abuse in our past, whether that's emotional neglect, physical abuse, sexual abuse, whatever you have. It's coming out of that because we don't have a healthy attachment. We have like a void in our life where our mom, our dad, or whoever, whatever consistent caretaker we could have had should exist. We have this like hole. And we're trying to put our therapist in it. And we've actually put our therapist in that hole And now we're so scared that they're going to leave because then we'll be left with that void. And so the real work, kind of to jump forward for you, the real work is going to be in you healing that wound and filling that hole yourself. That's through trauma processing, inner child work, depending on what your issue is. But for now, I cannot encourage you enough to tell your therapist about this. Let them know that you want to do some attachment-based work. Now, maybe your therapist doesn't do attachment-based work. That might be where I would say, like, let's look into other options. I don't mean you have to stop seeing this therapist, because I think there might be a piece here, and this depends on your ability to pay for it or access to it, but I think there might be something to keeping this therapist around as we work on this other, the attachment stuff with even another therapist, because having that therapist there keeps us from having a complete dysregulation situation and allows us to kind of slowly untangle and be okay. It's like a good opportunity to practice what we're going to need to practice to heal those attachment wounds. Does that make sense? I hope so. And so anyways, attachment is going to be where it's at. I have an attachment workshop on my website. If you want to check that out, that could be really helpful. But that's what we're experiencing, is that void that you have from childhood, which if you could maybe even do some journaling about where you think that comes from, what happened, what did you not get as a kid that you really needed? Did you have an inconsistent parent? Did you have an abusive parent? Did you have a neglectful parent? What was happening? If we can kind of figure that out, then we can figure out what we need, and then we can try to offer it to ourselves a little bit. And what I mean by offering that to yourself is when we really wish that our parent could show up for us, but they didn't, and they weren't consistent, can we show up for ourselves? Can we make sure that we keep promises to ourselves? When they didn't keep their promises to us, can we keep our promises? That's an example. Another could be taking care of our basic needs. Can we go grocery shopping? Can we bandage that wound? Can we make sure we get enough sleep? Can we make sure we drink enough water today? Those are all ways that we reparent and show up for ourselves in the way that our original parents or caretakers didn't. And in that, it sounds so maybe simple or silly, but it's vitally important and it's incredibly healing. So I believe through that work, the attachments work, as well as the reparenting, you can untangle what's going on here. Nothing's wrong with you. It's incredibly common. But my hope is that we will become less and less reliant and dependent upon our therapist. It doesn't mean we have to stop seeing them, but we'll become less and less reliant on them in this unhealthy way where we feel like we have to be doing poorly to keep seeing them. Because I don't believe that therapy is making you worse. It's this attachment that's making you want to ensure your therapist is there and that you have every right to see them. And so you're ensuring that you're not doing well so that you feel like you have quote unquote earned therapy. And I'm here to tell you that we don't have to earn therapy. Therapy is something that we can all benefit from. And wherever we're at, it can help us move to a better, more healthy place. And this urge to feel like we have to earn it would be what I would bring up with your therapist in your next session. Okay? Okay, let's move on to question number four. This question says, hey, Katie, what techniques are available to help you get through significant emotional dysregulation, like in the short term, the next few hours? I find the whole opening up in therapy very emotionally difficult. So I write out what I need to say between sessions, leading to an escalating emotional state prior to each session. Unfortunately, I had to cancel a session. I didn't react well. I was very surprised how difficult I found it. And I became very dysregulated and spent half a day with a significant dissociation that I couldn't coping skill my way out of. Do you have any tips for how to handle in the short term having an event that is a particular stressor when the coping skills are not enough? Yes, I've got a lot of skills and tools. Now, when I think about coping skills, I think of two. I think of distraction-based and I think of process-based. And process-based is always the goal. We do the distraction-based ones to kind of lessen our dysregulation so that we can do the process-based ones. Meaning distractions are like, I'll clean my house, walk my dog, paint my nails, watch one of my favorite shows, those kinds of things. Process-based is like, I'm going to journal, talk to my therapist, call a friend, do an impulse log. Okay. So those are two separate types of coping skills. And when both of those are like shit and they're not helping, I like to do what I call more of like a somatic based release, which I think might be what you're needing because you're just feeling so dysregulated. And those are the things like taking a cold shower or dunking your face in ice water. Now that sounds, I know, so jarring. There's a lot of research I know we're all sick of hearing about like ice plunges, but there's a reason that they're so good for us. They, when I tell you the ability for cold water to not only stimulate our vagus nerve, which helps produce more serotonin and dopamine and helps improve our mood, also it reduces inflammation. But there's this other piece that no one talks about enough, which is the fact you can't think about anything else. And it brings you into your body because you feel that cold on your body. And that can be really, really helpful when we're feeling dysregulated. Now, I'm not telling you to go out and buy an ice bath or anything like that, but you can get the same effect from dunking your face in cold water. That also triggers your diving reflex, which, you know, does a little vagus nerve stimulation too, or a cold shower. That breath in, that feeling that we get is really, really helpful and really, really regulating. Okay, give it a try. Also, we can do some grounding techniques, which I know seem like, okay, that doesn't help me dysregulate. Yes, it does. It helps get you in your body and stop you from feeling so overwhelmed. So stomp your feet, shake your body out. If you can't put your face in cold water, you can put a cold rag on your neck. You can count colors in the room, how many things are blue, black, green, whatever. We can go through the alphabet. What do you see that starts with an A, B, C, D, and keep going? Those are all of the things that I would encourage you to do. And then there's another one. I don't find it as like impactful with a punch like I do the cold, but the double breath in. If you guys don't listen to the Huberman Lab podcast, I encourage you to check it out. When we fill our lungs fully with air and then we do another breath at the top, we like fill it to the max and we expel all of that carbon dioxide that we just breathe, you know, we breathe in oxygen, breathe that out. Our body relaxes itself. It likes that exhalation. It feels relaxing to our system. I think it's part of the reason why true deep breathing and breathing techniques can really help us. That's another way to help help bring your regulation back into play. I find it not as effective with my patients, but to each their own. You can do, 4x4 or box breathing where you breathe in for 4, out for 4, hold for 4, repeat, or breathe in for 4, hold for 4, out for 4, sorry, and breathe in, hold, out, hold, you know, it's like that kind of thing. And so we just do 4, 4, 4, 4, holding it for 4 and doing it 4 rounds. It makes it really easy to remember, really easy to do. Those are all things that we can do to help us kind of move through an event. I personally find the more somatic stuff to be the most helpful. I find body shakes to be incredibly helpful and cold. The temperature, that cold on your face. You guys let me know in the comments if there's others. Those are the ways that I've encouraged my patients and encourage you today to help manage significant emotional dysregulation. Exercise also is helpful. That's why kind of like the stomping the feet and the shaking out. Like we have to give that energy that's queued up in our system a actual release point. And I know this might be a gross analogy, but just hang in there with me. If you have like an infected splinter in your finger and you push on the skin or like a pimple even, and nothing comes out, so frustrating. But if you go to a dermatologist to get that splinter, get that pimple pop, they poke a hole in it and then they squeeze it and it gives it that way out. It's like laying a road or a highway of a track out of town. We have to give our body that track, give it that energy, that track out of town. We need to get it out of our bodies. And so those, you know, that kind of prick of the finger could be something like the cold water or the exercise or the stomping or the moving, any of those things. We're giving it a highway out of our body. We sometimes have to lay that road. Does that make sense? Is that a good analogy? I hope so. Okay, let's move on. Question number 5. It says, hiya, Katie. Hiya. Do you have any advice about dealing with being assaulted by a therapist in session? I'm going to pause right there and tell any and every one of you, if you are assaulted by a therapist, a therapist starts up a romantic relationship with you, if you ever feel threatened or harmed in any way by your therapist, please report them. Go to the Board of Behavioral Sciences of your state or your country and report them. That's inappropriate. That's unacceptable. And that person, whoever they are, should not be seeing patients anymore. Okay? That's why we have a board. That's why we're licensed. That's why I'm always a little funny about people pretending to be life coaches or wellness coaches or whatever when they're not licensed. There's no protection for you. That's why I have my licenses, because you need to be protected as the patient. And if I do something that's wrong, they should either, you know, put a strike against my license or remove it. It's important that you feel safe, okay? And same with doctors, any professional. That's why we're licensed and doctors will be board certified. It's all as a way to ensure that we're properly educated and trained and that you are protected when you see someone, okay? Let's continue with this question. They said, so I developed an eating disorder in college as my depression and anxiety worsened along with it. I worked up the courage to go to the college-provided counselor, but because of the program's limitations and understaffing, the only available one was a male. I find much more comfort with women, so I really didn't want to go, but I had come this far. Long story short, after a few sessions, he ended up grabbing my hand when I was upset, which led to him touching and taking advantage of me. I was frozen on the chair and did nothing. I said nothing. I don't remember a lot. It's quite foggy, but I don't believe it was too horrible, but still not okay. It was before spring break, and basically no one was left in the office. I left and told no one. I'm ashamed and feel like a coward because perhaps he hurt others. This was a few years ago. Apparently he quit the same year. I looked on the website. Besides this comment, this is the only time I've ever mentioned to anyone my eating disorder, mental health, etc. And now I have this. I tried to go to a female therapist once recently and ended up panicking badly outside the building. My whole body shaking, and I had tunnel vision. I felt my body was refusing to let us enter. I ran to my car sobbing and drove home after I calmed down. I want help, but I can't even make it to the door now. And the only time I tried, it hurt me even more. How can I get help if I can't even make it through a doorway for a session to explain why I need the help? I could try online, but I'm such a people person normally. I think I'd benefit from in-person work so much more. I'm the same. I agree. I apologize. This was lengthy. Any advice would be lovely. You're so appreciated. Thank you. Of course. And there's a comment on this that I'm just going to read because it's kind of part of my answer. It says, Katie, if you see this, do any therapists do house calls? Would a therapist meet me in a neutral location like a coffee shop? Or is that not the best place to discuss things like this? Is there a specific or certain type of therapist that or could I request meeting one in a park just to get the ball rolling? Maybe this is very strange to ask, but I've thought about every option and I'd just like to finally begin healing. I'm ready. Okay. Other than the take their license, fuck that guy. I'm so upset. I hate when people take advantage and exploit the fact that they're in a power position. Shame on that therapist. Please report them. But I think when it's hard for us physically, because it's like a trauma trigger to go into therapy, it's okay to start virtually at first. Knowing like the first part of this question when they said, but I'm a people person, me too. I like to be in person too. But if even the idea of getting into a therapy office is like too overwhelming, let's do virtually first with the goal in your work through kind of like exposures, which is the best treatment for triggers. Things like OCD and trauma, we find the best result through exposure. Yes, it's uncomfortable. Yes, it's terrible. I'm not going to say it's not hard, but that would be a goal that you would work towards. But let's do virtual first, because that's the only way we're going to get you support now. So we have tools to calm our nervous system down so that in the future we can go into the office and use those tools and be okay. So that's really my advice. Let's do virtual with someone who is in our local area who we can see in person, but just for now, let's tell them we prefer virtual, okay? That's really the answer for that first piece. But to answer this comment about therapists doing house calls or meeting in neutral locations, yes, yes, and yes. Now, not every therapist is gonna do these, but it's okay to ask and they'll let you know. I think I'm a kind of maybe an oddball in the fact that because I specialize in eating disorders, I would go out to eat with my patients all the time. I would go to different locations, coffee shops, bakeries, get lunch, all sorts of different places. We could do what we call, you know, like fear foods and things like that with my patients. So like any kind of place. And we would, you know, do part of our session there. Usually because I worked in Santa Monica, we would walk from whatever place back to the office, but oftentimes not. And then we'd sit at like a park and finish the session. And then I would get in my car and go back to the office. So yes, you can do that. And also, especially when we're dealing with any kind of trauma, I know there are a lot of therapists out there. I've heard from our community, and also I have colleagues of mine who will go with their patients to spaces that feel better for them, less triggering, or it could be part of an exposure. Therapists do go into the field like that. We just have to ask them about it. And some therapists might say, oh, I don't do that kind of work. But if you find a trauma-informed or a trauma specialist, I guarantee they do. If you find someone who does like OCD stuff, I guarantee they do. And you honestly can just ask anybody, because every therapist should be educated in how to do that. We talk about it in school, or at least I did a lot. They should be able to accommodate you and get you through so that it feels less maybe triggering or overwhelming like an office can feel. Okay? So just ask. It's totally fine. Okay, let's move on to our final question. Question number 6 says, Katie, I recently read a quote saying, healing also means taking responsibility for the role you play in your own suffering. Can you please explain this to me? To me, it sounds like victim blaming. I experienced severe emotional neglect in childhood, and I grew up under constant threats and abuse. I've developed DID because of my childhood. What part am I playing in my own suffering? What part did I play in my own suffering back then? I existed. That was all I did. I existed. I don't get this quote. I don't know. Maybe it's not meant for me. Please help me understand. Thanks. We had some comments on this and some other thoughts. I have quite a few thoughts. When I read this quote, the way that I take it is, yes, bad things happened and you are not the cause, okay? You just existed, like you said. There's nothing you did to cause that. There's no victim blaming happening. But what are we doing today to perpetuate some of those old cycles? Meaning, I'll make this personal. So my dad worked away from home a lot. So I thought that in order to get more of his attention, I had to be perfect. So this has led me down like an anxiety, people-pleasing, perfectionistic type of chaos in my life. And I'm still untangling. I just stumbled across something else in therapy last week. And I was like, God, it's everywhere. So what I could say now is, yeah, like my dad working away from home and like, and I'm not comparing my situation to yours in any way. I'm just giving an example. So my dad working away from home, yeah, it caused all this stuff in me. And like, God damn, if he could have just had like a regular job, like my life would have been so much better, so much easier, so much different, blah, 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 right? We tell ourselves that. But what am I doing today to continue those beliefs or those stories or those whatevers, right? That's my role that I'm playing in my own suffering now. So that's kind of the way that I see it. Now, do I love this quote and would it be something that I would post online? Absolutely not. Because it does sound like victim blaming. And I feel like it comes from a place of someone not really understanding trauma, not being trauma informed. Someone left a comment kind of to that effect below this. And I think that's really true because yes, we are all responsible for trying to get better, but this quote makes it feel like we caused the suffering or we're playing a role. It puts the onus on the victim and that feels really shitty. But you have to think of it like, I think the person who probably said this is outside of a trauma type of lens. And they're looking at it like, you have anxiety and what are you doing today that's making the anxiety continue? Or what are the things that maybe you aren't reaching out to a therapist. Maybe you aren't open to taking medication. Maybe you put yourself in a really high stress job. And I'm not even saying that those things are like, it's your fault. But I think that's kind of what they're getting at. And I hope that makes sense of it. I, again, don't like the quote. I don't agree with the quote either, but those are kind of like my views of it. Because I would say a better quote would be that healing is going to mean that we have to acknowledge what we're doing today that is keeping us stuck in that past pain or something like that. Obviously, I'm coming up with this on the fly, and I'm sure this person thought about that a long time, but that would be more real for me. That would feel more correct. Less blamey, shamey. So I encourage you, forget about this quote. Let's move forward. If you like mine better, maybe scribble that one out and write that other one. Because I think that to tell people that they are to blame for their own suffering when we come from a trauma background, we already have a shit ton of shame and blame and guilt and embarrassment in our life. It just feels like compounding that. And that's really not a healthy place to be. So that's kind of my problem with people sharing a bunch of quotes online is because we just don't know. Sometimes they can be taken the wrong way. Sometimes they can sound very harmful and they can do harmful things. And so, yeah, let's ignore that and know that it's not from a place of trauma-informed thought. It's from a place of, I don't know, I guess personal responsibility, which is a piece for maybe other people working on other things. Okay. Thank you all so much for listening and watching. Thank you for sending in your questions. Thank you for sharing this podcast. It really helps. If you want to give it a review over on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen that allows you to review, that would be incredibly helpful. I love you all. Take care of yourselves. Do your homework. And I'll see you next week.